But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Natalia Vasnier and today I'm joined by Paris Jordan, Head of Responsible Investing at Charles Stanley. Alongside her role, Paris is also a member of the SCA's Advisor Sustainability Group and featured in the Citywire's Top 100 list for four consecutive years, running from 2021 to 2024. Paris, thank you for joining me today.
Lovely. Thank you very much for having me.
So we have a lot of things to talk about today, and I just wanted to kick off quickly on the topic of defence. There's been a lot of debate around in the industry about whether they have a role or not in sustainable and responsible portfolios, and I just wanted to get your view on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this topic of defence and ESG has been rumbling on for quite some time now. I know at the beginning of year it was a hot topic as many of the defence companies were looking to raise assets, and there was a bit of a debate in Parliament, I think it even went to. So broadly, from my perspective, I think most of the debate has been settled, but just to kind of clarify, I think there's wide understanding that if you are undertaking ESG kind of risk mitigation approaches, then they are compatible with defence companies. So ESG at its core is making sure that you are looking at the material risks to a company, and we can see that there are many even third-party rating agencies who do have and have written great reports on defense companies, and you can identify which of those defense companies are undertaking ESG from a risk and opportunities perspective, and they can and should be included. Now, where I think it gets a bit trickier, and probably where people are more pointing to should defence be within sustainable or ethical portfolios, you firstly got the ethical perspective, which is known as that screening, and that's values based. If a client doesn't want to be invested in defence, then you can screen that sector out, and that is absolutely fine. But again, that is a client choice. Now, the debate around sustainability, so are defence companies adding kind of the positive outcome alongside financial returns, is one for me that, again, I like to leave to more of the client piece, because I think you can make an argument both ways. You can make an argument that defence is there in certain occasions to protect from an invasion from a different country. And so you should be investing in companies that are trying to defend, whether it be human rights or just ownership rights. But secondly, you can also take the stance from a sustainable standpoint that all kind of weaponry, arms, defence itself does not create positive and peaceful outcomes. So that's where you need to really understand that it is a values piece a lot of the time, and you should really defer to those funds and fund managers to determine what it is they are doing, and then select those investments appropriately for those portfolios. And that is the approach that we take here. Understand something, take a look at it and get as much information, so transparency is key, and then determine whether it's appropriate for the outcome that you're trying to meet. So as ever, one size does not fit all, but it's probably why the debate has carried on for so long, because there is so much nuance in there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then another trend that we also discussed together a bit earlier this year around ETFs and mainly active ETFs. Yeah. At the time, you were saying that you were looking for an active ETF that met the sustainability threshold to be part of the portfolios. Have you found that product yet?
Not just yet, but we are still looking. In fact, next week, I've got a lot of meetings with a variety of providers. And so we are still seeking to find those active ETFs. I actually think, and we'll probably get onto it later, but this year, stewardship and engagement has kind of fallen down the priority order for a lot of asset managers. I think that's due to global sentiment and trends. But of course, if you're looking for funds that do meet those sustainability requirements and ETFs as well, that is quite an important element of that. So if there's going to be more of a focus back onto stewardship and engagement, I suspect that we'll find a lot more, not just ETFs, but funds as well that start qualifying for that sustainability threshold. I still hold out hope, and I know, and I'm sure there are a variety out there, but for us, we haven't yet found those that I want to be including in our portfolios.
What would be the type of criteria you'd be looking into? So you were mentioning stewardship. Are there other criteria you're looking for?
Yeah, so there's so for us, when it comes to sustainability, we have four criteria that we can meet. You'll be unsurprised to hear that they really do fall in line with the kind of SDR labeling, but ultimately they are those that are looking for positive outcomes. So there's a focus on metrics or future positive or capturing positive opportunities, basically making things better alongside financial returns. We're looking for companies that potentially have a thematic in them. So a sustainable thematic, they're investing in something like water availability, biodiversity. We're looking for those with that engagement piece, as I've already noted. And of course, there's that impact component as well. So they do fit quite nicely into the SDR labeling regime that obviously was introduced last year. And for us, that's the hurdle. Outside of that, of course, we'd be looking for what I would now call more traditional approaches around ESG and potentially negative screening. But we do have that minimum threshold for sustainability.
Okay. And does that include any exclusions that you have? Because I know that that's a big piece of responsible portfolios.
So for us, we have you probably hear me say it multiple times, we like to tailor our portfolios to the individual clients. So on the and equally as we're buying funds, each of those fund managers will have their own exclusions policy. So what we try to do is we have a baseline kind of portfolio, which does have a variety of different screens in it, but we don't have our own one. But what we do is where a client has specific needs or requirements, we absolutely have the ability to undertake that negative screening approach. We certainly do it for a range of charities who obviously have alignment with particular values. And so that bespoke and tailoring component's really important to us. So if you think about when I'm talking about sustainability, think about that as kind of the purity baseline. And then if a client is interested in not being invested in particular sectors, we can facilitate that via that tailoring approach.
Okay, I see. And so you were mentioning SDR, and I did have a question about the regulator. So back in April, they said that they were putting an indefinite pause on their plans to roll up SDR for model portfolios. What's your view on that?
It's a great question. It's one that actually I was talking to some industry individuals about just 2 days ago, so it's still very topical. I think when they came out saying that there was an indefinite pause, I did then have a meeting and at a conference with them where they kind of rolled back on some of that language quite quickly. So initially it sounded like it was just going to be pushed away, but then it was very much, no, we're just taking stock of what we've done thus far, and then we're going to consider model portfolios and discretionary portfolios. I think one of the key components that really needs to be ironed out before they can start making headway with these areas is the offshore funds. So at the moment, the regimes between UK, Europe, and rest of the world are incredibly different. So what qualifies in one jurisdiction as something doesn't qualify in another. And there are a range of examples that I can give to you where they would meet a criteria in one country, whereas they wouldn't meet our sustainability criteria here. So there needs to be, and I think it's with HM Treasury at the moment, to work out that alignment with the offshore funds. Because what we tend to find is when we're building model portfolios or even discretionary or bespoke portfolios, we don't just use UK domiciled funds. So we are having to do a huge amount ourselves at the moment. So me and my team do a huge amount of research into whether it meets our thresholds rather than particularly the SDR thresholds or even the SFDR thresholds. And that's absolutely fine. But of course, if you're a regulator, you can't mandate an approach when only a fraction of your investments actually qualify for that regime in the first place. So there's some building blocks that need to happen before they can start looking at the model portfolios and the bespoke portfolios again. And that is something that I have a great deal of respect for them on, because otherwise, I could have foreseen they would have undermined their own regime. They chose not to do that. They really listened to and interacted with the practitioners in the space. And so it is, they've made it quite clear that it's not a never, it's just a when.
Okay. And do you think that when is going to happen in the near future, or do they have to go through all those hurdles you were mentioning?
I think there'll be a lot of hurdles. And then the question is, how long is a piece of string? So I suspect it depends on what priorities different departments have before they can come back to this. The reassuring piece, though, is that they are just broadly going to look at MPS and models under the multi-firm review. That doesn't explicitly mean they're going to look at sustainability, but at least it means that they are continuing at least some oversight to ensure that consumers have the right outcomes. Equally, I would also say that there are still things on the horizon that do show that sustainability in the investment space is still an area of, say, interest at least, but hopefully support as we go forward. So firstly, recently the FCA was granted powers to for regulation oversight for the ESG providers. I think that's a very good step. I hope they do it in a helpful way rather than a way that provides too much oversight. We still need to create an environment where there are third-party specialists who can provide ESG ratings and information, but it just needs to be appropriate to the people using it. And then the other piece that the FCA is being broadly supportive on, of course, is the Advisor Sustainability Group. So a paper of best practice for advisors, helping them on how to incorporate sustainability into their processes, will be released in the coming months. And I know that the team working on that has put a lot of effort into it. So it should not just help with day-to-day integration with sustainability into portfolios, but it should also set some more guidance on how to achieve the right outcomes.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's a good sign as well to see that the regulator's getting more and more interested in sustainability. And I kind of wanted to get your view on that point as well. Have you noticed a renewed interest from clients around these topics? Because I was looking at kind of Morningstar flows, and it shows huge inflows since June and over the past few months into ESG climate focused funds. Is that a trend that you're seeing? Would you say you're a bit more hopeful about the future now?
So I personally think it's slightly too early to say I'm extremely hopeful about the future in the near term, in the short term. I do think on a 3, 5, 10 year basis, I think absolutely the trajectory is positive. What I don't want to do is sit here and say that everything's rosy right now. We know that the sentiment around sustainability has been sour at least for a year, possibly even 2 to 3 years, as interest rate changes affected a lot of the sustainability funds, and performance was fairly poor. We also know that the United States has not been investing in sustainability. In fact, outflows have been the case since 2021, and that's been the same every quarter. But the green shoots absolutely are in Europe. They remain that way as well. The Morningstar flows report that you're talking about has been a little bit choppy. We saw some outflows, we saw some inflows, and I think that makes sense considering where we are in the cycle. And we must remember these things are cyclical as well. You know, you do see renewed interest at times of need, or if the strategies are performing because of the macro environment, and you do see them out of favor if there are sentiment issues, if there's regulatory issues, or if performance isn't doing particularly well, which is why it's really important to have diversified portfolios, and it's super important to look over the long term. For me right now, I do still think we've got a little while to go. I know that view is not broadly accepted. Again, I was speaking to some peers recently, and a few of them said they think we've met the bottom already. I am mildly optimistic, but I'm cautiously so. I still think we've got a little while to go, particularly particularly as we've got very divergent regulatory environments occurring as well. We're seeing positivity in some areas and greater negativity in others. The irony is there's often a backlash to the backlash. So when that happens, we'll be in great stead. My main focus, which has been over the last year and will be for the coming years, is just to embed our approach to sustainability. It is to ensure that we are doing what we need to do, not just from a regulatory standpoint, but from a consumer outcome standpoint. And my career is very long and people's investment horizons are very long. There will be peaks, there will be troughs. So if we continue doing what we're doing, when that renewed sentiment of positivity comes through, then my aim is that we'll be in a great position to support it.
Yeah. That makes sense. And you were mentioning the risk. I kind of wanted to flip on the other side. And where do you see kind of the most opportunities from an investment point for the portfolios?
Yeah. So if I'm entirely honest, a lot of sustainable funds in general have really had a tough time. There are some areas that I still think do have a lot of value at the moment. Markets have been running excessively. It has not been the space for quality. It has been the space for high growth funds, particularly as I hate to mention it immediately, but definitely the Mag 7 and the tech funds as well. If you have asked me that question, 6 months ago, I would have said to you that clean energy transition was absolutely in the dumps. And interestingly, the turnaround in that space over the last few months has been extraordinary. So, you know, we're looking at, depending on what index you look at, you're looking at a return probably year to date, even less than that, between 30-60%. It seems to have snuck by when everybody else is looking at tech stocks and gold, and it has been happening in the background. So what I would say is that certainly was a space of opportunity because it did reach the bottom. I think over the long term, it still remains a good space to deliver returns. But to be frank, when it comes to the sustainability space, most of it's been a bit battered. And so if you want to invest now to some extent. I'm not giving investment related advice, more just if you look at the broad space of things that have been out of favor versus those that have been in favor, this space certainly has been unloved. You also mentioned at the beginning around climate. There has also over the last 18 months been a huge amount of money go out of climate. So I'm talking climate solutions, climate transition, climate adaptation. So it's not purely just energy transition, but it's all sorts of adaptation to climate. I think that space is particularly interesting. And the one space that I'm always have my eye on is the water space as well, especially given the growth or projections of AI and the usage or need they have for fresh water as well. So it's something that for me has quite a lot of potential and opportunity for the long run.
And have you made any fund changes recently following those areas where you see more opportunities like clean energy and water?
So you'll be happy to know that we actually launched some sustainable multi-asset guidance portfolios in the middle of this year. So I was really fortunate to be able to enact everything I've just said to you and effectively, in my view, buy at a really good price and value. So through the launch of those, our views that I've just spoken about have been reflected. For example, we do have some transition funds in there. We do have some clean water funds in there. And then we do have, as I mentioned, quite a lot of quality, sustainable quality. What we have also tried to do is balance. You heard me mention not too long ago the fact that we had a lot of sustainable growth funds a few years ago that did really well and then performance was poor. What we've tried to do is not to be too concentrated in one style. So we have tried to buy kind of value stocks as well as growth stocks so that we can weather the long term if people are investing in these portfolios. But in terms of probably a good time to launch a range of portfolios, I rather hope that, you know, we've selected the time where there's a lot of value and opportunity rather than buying in at a peak.
That's an interesting point. And the other day I was speaking to somebody in the space who was saying that the moving forward, he's expecting to see more clients using sustainable portfolios as a diversifier to their general investment kind of account rather than as a, allocating all of their allocations to purely sustainable portfolios. Would you agree with that?
I would broadly agree. And I think one of the key reasons for that is actually just the intergenerational wealth transfer. So you've got to be mindful about risk profiles. You've got to be mindful about longevity, time horizon. And I think if there are, you know, grandparents, parents who are looking to invest for the future, they need to certainly consider this. But at the same time, they might be balancing their own income needs, right? They might be in they might be in bonds and cash. They're probably taking some money from it. So, but part of that portfolio absolutely can be aligned with that sustainability and long 10, 20 year kind of horizon. And I think sustainability as a result lends itself really well to that, because you do get greater portfolio diversification there. You're invested in certain opportunities that you might not be with a traditional portfolio. And, you know, we've seen the interests, even at a time where sentiment is poor, we have seen quarter by quarter, the global assets continue to grow in this space. To your point around Morningstar's report, they now estimate there's $3.7 trillion invested in sustainability globally, and that's in dollars. So my expectation is that will continue to grow. People will continue to diversify portfolios. They'll look to the future to manage that wealth transfer. And what we've also seen is that people of a younger age tend to be more interested in this. So as they continue to grow and get older, then naturally that's going to make sense in terms of portfolios. And I also think it's one of those things that you can have it as part of your portfolio, not as the entirety of your portfolio, if you don't have that particular desire and passion, because ultimately you are trying to balance two objectives. You're trying to balance that sustainability objective alongside your financial objective. And sometimes you do need to balance the two out in order to get the best outcome for that client.
That's understandable. And kind of like the big topic at the moment that I keep hearing frustrations about is around benchmarks. Mm-hmm. Mainly the lack of ESG comparator, kind of data lagging, the wide equity kind of bands, which are sometimes don't align with the type of risk that certain managers have in for their portfolios. Well, what's your view around benchmarks, and how do you currently assess performance for your portfolios?
So we take the approach of we do comparisons of two benchmarks. The first of which is a market kind of benchmark, so based on our kind of strategic asset allocation. And the second is we look at peers as well. I think it's important to make sure that you are paying attention to what those around you are doing in order to achieve kind of greater outcomes. What we do not do is we don't use an ESG benchmark. The reason why is because of the nuance and the subjectivity in this space, you also find that benchmarks are subjective and they are very different. And again, you are comparing kind of apples to oranges. What we don't want to do is compare ourselves to an incredibly stringent benchmark where they have screened out, say, 30% of the universe, yet we can invest in it and we look fantastic. And likewise, the other way around, we look really poor when actually it's because of, you know, sector exposures. Our preference is to explain that if you are choosing a sustainability strategy or part of your portfolio as a sustainability strategy, it will perform differently to a non-sustainable portfolio. We do believe that long-term, the client objectives and our objectives we have for our financial returns can still be met, but the journey itself will be different. You made a good point on things like volatility, you made a good point around, you know, opportunities. Some of the opportunities that we see are in both our sustainable and our non-sustainable portfolios because they are just great opportunities. But at other times, we do have limitations on what we can invest in just because of the nature of our second objective, of which having that high sustainability hurdle. So when we're speaking with clients, it's really important to explain to them that you are asking for something different from the rest of the market because you are looking for sustainability. Therefore, your portfolio will perform differently. What you then can do is ascertain how much appetite a client has for that. And of course, risk as well in terms of where they sit in the risk bucket. And then to the point we just made a moment earlier, if they have a lower appetite for active risk or tracking error, you can perhaps invest in sustainability as part of your portfolio rather than the entirety of it. So there are ways around this. I do know that there are individuals out there who prefer to have benchmarks which are tailored to them. They have an ESG benchmark or a sustainability benchmark. We, like I said, we tend to avoid that because, again, you can cherry pick the benchmarks. You can pick ones that are not appropriate to you. And even if you do pick one that you think is appropriate to you, if you have different client requirements, then that benchmark is probably going to look different for that client too. So our aim is just to explain that by selecting this strategy, it will look different because it's supposed to look different. And I think that's something that is really hard for financial advisors, investment managers to kind of explain to clients. But it's something that people are getting better at. You know, if you choose a strategy that's meant to be different, it probably should perform differently as well. But it's one that comes up fairly regularly. And I think me and my colleagues have said, you know, at least even maybe even having a sustainable peer benchmark might even be useful for our own sanity internally. But of course, everybody does something slightly different. So that subjectivity is always going to be the challenge. So just being upfront and honest and explaining, we use the main benchmarks, but they will behave differently is from my perspective, the best way to go. And it avoids any of that misunderstanding and greenwashing risk as well.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point. And I think that's a good point to end it on. Paris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Wealth Show. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.